Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pechet Amalek by the Mishnah. Mishnah begins, Klei Alach Mikadashim Et Alach, Midot Yavesh Mikadshot Et Yavesh. It comes to liquid Chelim, they are Mikadesh liquids, and dry measurements are Mikadesh Et Yavesh. And that is based on what we saw in the Mishnah, that the Mizbeach and the Kevesh are Mikadesh HaRa'ui Lo. Those things that are Ra'ui LeMizbeach, the Mizbeach functionally is able to be Mikadesh them even if they are Pasul. So here, the Klei Sharet, they only work to be Mikadesh things that are Ra'ui Lehem. But when it comes to Klei Lach, then the liquid measurements are Mikadesh things that are appropriate for it, which are liquids, and the dry measurements are Mikadesh things that are appropriate for it, and those are dry items. Rashi over here says that the change in the Lashon of the Mishnah between Klei Lach and Midot Yavesh is because by the Yavesh, there are only two Midot in the whole Mikdash. Shte Midot Yavesh Ayu, Yisaron V'chatzi Yisaron. There was only two, and therefore there were only Midot. There was nothing else. There were only measured dry measures in the Mikdash. Therefore it calls them Midot. On the other hand, by the Klei Lach, not only were there Kelim that were measured Kelim, there were also Kelim, which we're going to see, such as the Ke'arot and the Mizrakot, that were not defined by a measurement. They simply were utensils used for capture and for working in. So that's why the Mishnah uses a differentiated Lashon between Yavesh and Lach, Klei Lach, because there's more than just measuring cups in the sense of liquid. But by Midot Yavesh, when they're only measuring utensils, then it's called Midot Yavesh. The Bali Tosafot are perplexed by this, and say, v'tema v'ayika bisa. What about the bisa, which was the trough of sort that the menachot were made in and balul, and they were mixed in? And that's a klei yavesh, and it's not something with a measurement in it. And he brings other examples, like the machta, or the ktoret, the kaf, the machteshet. He has all these other kelim in the mikdash that deal with dry goods. They don't have any measurement associated with them. And therefore, he brings the alternative of the Rabbeinu Tam, Pirush Rabbeinu, naharechi kari liyavesh mida, below the kli, the fish yavesh yochlim limdod machuk o gadush b'chol inyan shirtzeh. When it comes to dry goods or dry measurements, you can measure them in any way you want. Meaning that there is a way to measure them, which is machuk means flattened out at the top, or they can be heaped on the top. There are fixed ways to measure dry goods. Aval davar lach lo shach midah gabe. By liquids, you can't speak about a fixed measurement. Shrei midat lach enu shavet, the davar lach enu yochol liyot gadush. They can't be the same, or the relationship of a gadush to machuk, none of those can be the same because all liquids have different viscosity to them and different densities to them. And therefore the midat alach actually will depend on which liquid is being placed into them as to how much you can get in terms of surface tension, how much you can get in terms of density of the item inside of the utensil. He says with regards to lach, it's less fixed between the different liquids, and that's why he calls them the klei alach. On the other hand, by the yavesh, even though again, density would matter, but yavesh, there's always a fixed percentage of the relationship between a utensil that's full and a utensil that is heaped on or piled up upon. And therefore, that relationship makes it that you can come up with a fixed ratio between the items and makes it much easier to call them midot than those of the klei lach. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam's solution to as to why the Mishnah changes the Lashon over here. Now, the Mishnah continues and says, "En klei lach mikadeshet et yavesh, lo yavesh mikadesh et halach." Now, the truth is that Rashi, if you look, has a slightly different girsa, and that is en klei halach mikadeshot et yavesh, and that's the plural form rather than en klei lach mikadeshet et yavesh, below yavesh mikadesh et halach. Over here, it seems to be in the singular form, so that would create some sort of inconsistency in the language of the Mishnah. But either way, it's what it's saying is what we already mentioned before, that the liquid measurements can affect dry goods, and dry measurements can affect liquids. Klei HaKodesh Shenikvu. If you have any of the Klei Sharet that get a hole in them, Imosim Behem Me'im Achtan Sheusim. If they're able to still function in the way that they did before, in the same manner as when they were whole, Mikachim, then they can still be Mikadesh, and they can still function as Klei Sharet. So that means that either you say that the whole somehow reduces the volume they're able to work with, but nevertheless, it can still measure volume. So whether it's a Klei Alach or Midot Yavesh, either way, the measurement is still there, it's just a different size, half the size it was before, quarter the size it was before, but it's still functioning like it was before. That's one way to explain it. Or Me'im Alachtan Sheyusin means that they still function the same way they did before. For instance, the measure didn't reach the top of the kli before, and if the top of the kli chips, then it doesn't affect the functioning of the kli, and therefore it still does, me'im lachtan means really the same lacha it did before. So you could either read it as being Me'in Melachtan means a similar type of melacha, or it can be the exact same type of melacha, even though the kli has something that's changed about it. And as we'll see later in the Gemara, that in general, when the kelim have problems with them, we don't usually utilize them. But what the Mishnah is saying is, if they are utilized in this state, they still are successful at being mikadesh, whatever that is put into them. If they don't have that ability to do me'in melachtan, then they can't be mikadesh, no longer function as kli sharet. Kulan, ein mikadshin ele bekodesh. And all of these kelim, the kli sharet, only function inside of the azara. Outside the azara, the kli sharet are not functioning. Now, different rishonim and achronim have different ways of breaking this down. Some say that only within the context of the azara do the kli hakodesh work. Outside, they don't work at all. Others suggest, and we'll see a concept like that today, which is within the azara, they are mikadesh. But mikadesh make them kodesh to then continue on because shrut, whatever you're doing. But they also are mikadesh lifson, which means that if something happens to them, including tuma, lina, other things like that, they will affect the item that's inside of the clay sharet. On the other hand, outside of the azara, then it only has the ability to be mikadesh lipasel, but not mikadesh for kashrut. So it can give it a status of kedusha to the point that if it comes into contact with tuma, it will affect the item. But it won't give it the kedusha that then you can go and use it inside of the azara or inside the mikdash afterwards be kashrut. So there are different ways to formulate what it means that they function within the azara, whether it means that only in the azara it works, outside it doesn't work, or in the azara it works in a manner that is kasher and facilitates the avodah that's being done. Whereas outside it's mikdash, but in the negative sense, it only gives it the properties that can make it to become pasul, but isn't successful at making it kodesh to the point where then it can be used, the avodah in the mikdash. And the achronim add that the kli can only become kodesh as a kli sharet when it's utilized within the mikdash or within the azara itself. So it can only take on the shame of a kli sharet within the azara. And the possibility that if it's placed in a kli sharet mechutz l'azara and then brought into the azara, that fact that it's now in the azara might be successful at being mikdash the item because now it's in a kli sharet that is in the azara. Where it says, Amar Shmuel, lo shanu, Ela midot, avo mizrakot mikadashin. So that's only true when these are fixed measures, that the klei halach, the liquid measurements, are not successful at being mikadesh, dry goods. When you have things like the mizrakot, which are generally used for liquids, nevertheless they have the capacity to be mikadesh, dry measurements, because they have no measure associated with them. They're just utensils that are used. Shenemar, and they bring a proof from the Korbanot HaNisi'im at the consecration of the Mishkan in Parshat Naso, which says, Shneim Mleim Solet. So in each of the Nisi'im over there, it says, V'Korbanot Karat Kesef Achat Shloshimu Meya Mishkapla. So that's the Ke'ara. And then you have Mizrak Echad Kesef Shivim Shekel B'Shekel HaKodesh. So that's a Mizrak. Shneim, both of them, Mleim Solet B'Lula B'Shem and the Mincha, are then filled with fine flour and oil to make a Mincha. Now, a mincha is a dry good, and you're being mikadeshit inside of the mizrak and inside of the ke'ara, which generally are used for liquids, for kabbalat adam, and items like that. So Shmuel says that the limitation of our Mishnah is only when you're talking about liquid measure or a dry measure, but when you're dealing with these nondescript kelim, which have no fixed measure to them, but they're utilized for lach in general, they have the capacity then to affect that which is yavesh. Samalei Rav Acha midifti the Ravina mincha lachahi. Since when is the mincha a dry good? The fact that mincha is a liquid good means that you can't conclude what Shmuel did from this. Shmuel says, well, you have a mincha in there. Mincha is a dry good, so it shows you that the liquid utensils can take a dry good and be mikadeshin. Says that's just not correct. The mincha is a liquid good because of the fact that it's mixed with oil. So that has liquid associated with it, and that's why it's mikadesh. That's only for the dry parts of it. Even though you mix the flour with the oil, there's still parts of the mincha, because it's granular in nature, the solet, that you will still have dry portions or dry pieces of it. Those dry pieces that are not, quote-unquote, now lach, they don't have a status of lach, they need to get their kedusha somehow. And that's happening inside of this kli sharet. And that shows you that, again, this kli sharet is successful, despite the fact that it's normally utilized for liquids. It is successful being mikadesh, that which is a dry good. Bibay Dema, Mincha legabi dam ke yavesh dami. Other possibility is it's a relative situation. Mincha, you might call it a liquid because there's an oil in it, but you look at it in relationship to blood, it's certainly not a liquid, it's a much more of a dry good. So therefore, you suggested that the mincha is a liquid. It's not. It's a dry good. Yes, it has some liquids in it, but in relationship to dam, we would classify it in the dry good section and not in the liquid section. And therefore, Shmuel now has his proof that we have dry goods that are being placed into a kehara or a mizrak, which are generally used for liquids. And nevertheless, the Torah says that mincha that was kudash in the korbanot ta'nisiim. All right. Amar Shmuel, klei sharet ein mekadshin ela shlemim. They can only have the ability to act and be mekadesh when they are whole. Ein mekadshim ela mleim. They also have to be full. Ein mekadshim ela mitochan. And they only are successful at doing it internally. Ve'amri la, some have the formulation in the following way. Ein mekadshim ela shlemim umleim umibifnim. So that here you have a formulation that puts them all together. In the first way, it's all separate, and here it's all together. And the Gemara wants to know, my benayu, what's the difference between these formulations? Ikebenayu berutze midot. The difference between them is the heaping on top. Let's go through each of the items. Shlemim, we already saw in the Mishnah, that these have to be items that are whole, and have to be kelim, that are respectable kelim, not that are chipped and broken. So that's number one. Number two is that they have to be mleim. Ray Rashi reads it as mleim, they have to be measured for a full measurement. If this is a utensil that has an isaron in it, if it's a utensil that has a log in it, then you have to fill it to the full log, or you have to fill it to the full isaron in order for it to be mikadesh, the item. But if you only fill it halfway, it won't be mikadesh, the item, because you didn't reach the point of mleim, the point that it is full. The other possible way to read mleim would be to say mleim means they have to be full to the top. Now that would mean that the measurement was made exactly so that when you filled it to the top, you got that measurement. And so then it would be synonymous. Mleim would mean that the utensil is completely full, but it also means that it hits the measurement that this utensil was intended for. But to me, that would be another possible way to explain the word mleim. And then it says mitochan. That only happens inside of them. So that comes to exclude a situation in which there's some sort of external cavity. That it's not mikadesh, those items, because it's only internally to the utensil that it is mikadesh. So then you have two formulations of it, one which separates them into three different categories, and then one that puts them all together, elishlemim mleim umibifnim, and then mibifnim sound like bifnim means inside of the kli, and that's what Tosfot says over here, mefarish rabbeinu chaim de mifnim, the kli, ka'amar, va'atelimute chakak moshevo mibachutz, that you put some sort of area where you can have a receptacle on the stand below or on the sides, and that would be mibifnim. Rashi, on the other hand, says mibifnim means in the azara, similar to what we said in the Mishnah, that they're only mikadesh within the azara. Tosfot does not like that explanation because the Mishnah gives us a terminology for that. That's called kodesh. And therefore, mibifnim means inside or internally. And so then, the brayta that said, ein mikadshin ela mitochan for Rashi, so that only things that are internal to the kli are successful at being kodesh. Whereas in the second formulation where it says mibifnim, according to Rashi, that means in the azara, not internal to the kli. And if that's the case, then only the first formulation believes that you need to have it totally internal to the kli. The second formulation would allow you to have the heaping area on top also be included, even though it's not internal to the kli. And Rashi says this parallels a machloket that we have in Tanaim in the Mishnah in Menachot with regards to whether Beritzei Midot are Nitkadesh or non-Nitkadesh. Karen Ora is somewhat perplexed by that statement of Rashi because there is no such Mishnah. Rather, all the Tanaim agree that Beritzei Midot Yavesh are Chol and Beritzei Midot Lach are actually Kodesh. Therefore, he explains the answer of the Gemara as to what's the difference in Lashon between Shmuel and the Braita. And the answer is that they're speaking about different materials. When it is the Beritzei Midot of Yavesh or not Nitkadesh, and that's why it learns the Lashon of Tochan, that only which is inside them is Nitkadesh. Whereas the Lashon of the Braita that he uses Mibifnim is referencing to the Midot Alach, because those are Nitkadesh, even Beberutzei Midot, but just not on other areas that are carved into the item to create a receptacle. Only in the main receptacle do you have Kiddusha. But that's even with the Beberutzei Midot that are on there. So the Karen Arad claims that the answer of the Gemara is one speaking about Yavesh, and one is speaking about Lach, and there is no stira over here. Or the way that the Balei Tosfot are learning it, according to the Rabbeinu Chaim, that Mipifnim is similar to Mitochan.
The one that says Mitochan is Mikadesh, only that which is inside the Kli. Whereas the one that says Mipifnim is only when he's Chokek something outside. But if he's not Chokek something outside, then that which is internal, that which is inside the Kli, even if it is piled up or heaped up on the outside, will be Nitkadesh Ayidei the Kli Sharet.
So that would generate the difference of Ika Beinai Uberutse Midot. We might need the Tana. In a bright that we have Imekad Shina L'Shlemim. Similar again, that the Kli has to be whole. Umleim, full. Again, the two explanations that we had. Either it means you have to get to the full measurement, or it means that you have to fill the Kli entirely, which is the measurement. Umitochan, Ubibifnim. And then, it has to be Mitochan inside of them, and Mibifnim, internal to them. So then, again, according to this, Rashi, it would be Mibifnim means in the Kodesh. Or the Balei Tosfot means mitochan, internally, umibifnim, that which is inside of the toch, of the kli. So now, Amar Abiyasim Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela shein dato losif. That's only in a case where he doesn't intend to add to the measurement till he reaches the full measurement. Avot dato losif, rishon rishon kodesh. If he intends to get to the full measurement, then it's mikadeshit as it goes along. So an instance where you have a isaron, and then you put in a chatzi isaron. If that's all you're gonna do, then the Kli Sharet will not be Mekadeshit because you're below the threshold of the measurement of this Kli. On the other hand, if it is on the way, you're putting it half in now, to put it in the second half afterwards to get to the full Yisaron, then when the first half goes in, it becomes Kodesh because of the expectation that there's a second half coming and you will either fill the Kli or reach the measured amount of this Kli and it will be Mekadeshit as it goes in. Tanya Nami Ochiv, a brighter that's support of this, Mleim, Eim Mleim Elish Lemim, that we had before from the Pasuk, Shneim Mleim Solet. What does it mean that they're Mleim Solet? Mleim Ela Shleimim, that they have to be full and complete. Am Rav Yossi, Eim Batai, Zman Shein Dato Losif. As long as he doesn't intend to add on. Avod Dato Losif, Rishon Kodesh. The first piece that goes in becomes Kodesh till you build up to Shleimim. So here, Shleimim doesn't mean that the Kli itself is Shleim, but that you reach the Midah HaShleima, that you reach the full Midah that this Kli has the capacity for. So you see in the Braita, despite the demand for Shleimim, that'd be a full Midah, Rabbi Yossi qualifies it and says that that doesn't have to be all at once. You can build up to get to that point. And that is supportive of what we just saw before from Rav, that it doesn't mean Shleimim from the outset, but Shleimim is the ultimate goal of what you're putting into this Kli. And in the interim, it'll be Mekadesh, everything that is leading to that full capacity. Now, Gemara continues, En Kli Alach Mekadesh. Amar Rav Vitei Meravasi. Ein Mekadshim Li Karev. When they are not successful being Mekadesh the item, that means that they're not Mekadesh it in order to put it on the Mizbeach or to utilize it in the Avodah. Avo Mekadeshim Li Pasel. But they are successful making a Kodesh to disqualify it so that if it becomes Tameh or if there's Lina with it, it will be problematic. So the Klei Alach that are being Mekadesh, the Dovar Yavesh, they are not successful at doing that so that the Dovar Yavesh can now be used in the Avodah, but they are successful enough that it gives it a Shem Kodesh that can spoil it or ruin it if something goes wrong at that point. Igad Matni Laha, some bring that qualification of Rav on the following. One may not bring a mincha or a nesech or a libation or a minchat behema or the minchat nesachim and the mincha that comes along with the korban, ubikurim and the fruits that are brought up to Yerushalayim as part of the process of the Mikurim, can't bring any of those mina midumah. So Rashi claims over here midumah means that it is truma and chulim that's mixed together, which is the traditional way to translate this word all over Shas. It's a mixture of something that is chulim and something that is truma, which is edible to the Kohanim, but not edible to a regular Yisrael. And Rashi claims over here that that's precluded from being used in the Avodah because of the fact that the Pasuk in Yechezkel says Mimashke Yisrael. That has to be from Mimuna Mutar the Israel. The only liquids and items that can be brought in the Mikdash that are usable are things that a regular Israel could drink or eat outside of the context of the Kodesh here. So there can't be any other psul or problem with the item, otherwise it cannot be brought in the Mikdash. So Rashi claims that that extends to Truma Umiduma over here, because of the fact that only Kohanim can eat it and not Israel. And the Pasuk says Mimashke Israel, means it particularly has to be available and edible by a Israel. And since Chulin and Shuma are not that, they can't be used in the Avodah. And that's what it means, that they can't come from this miduma. And then, obviously, we're speaking about items that they themselves are asurim, like orla and kilei akerim, which are isurei achila, isurei hana'a. Certainly, those items cannot be the source for whatever we're bringing over here. That's the way Rashi explains. If you look in the Balei Tosafot, he says the Rabbeinu Chaim mefaresh that miduma is not what Rashi says, but rather it's a mixture of orla and kilei akerim and something else that is mutar. So that miduma is not your classic miduma of truma. The reason that Tosafot goes in that direction is because he thinks Rashi's interpretation of Mashkei Yisrael is incorrect. Because we find other cases where things that are only edible by the Kohanim can still be brought to the Avoda and the Mikdash, and it does not disqualify them just because they're only available to Kohanim to consume and not to Israel. And so they believe Mashkei Israel means as long as a Jew can eat this item, that's enough of a reason to say that it is mutar to be brought in the Mikdash. And so therefore Truma and Chulin would have been fine, not that we would do that l'chatchila, but if it was done, it would not be disqualified automatically because it is something that is consumed by the Kohanim. Bimivi, and if he brings it, lo kiddush, you're unsuccessful at making it to Kodesh. Amarav, itema ravasi. So this is where we have that qualification of Rav written about this. Lo kiddush li karev. You're unsuccessful at making them Kodesh that they will go on the Mizbeach and be used in the Avoda. Aval kiddush li pasel. But you are successful in being mikadesh to ruin it, meaning that it takes on a kedusha by which Tuma and Lina and all these other things can affect it. And in this instance, it's actually going to make it that it can't be utilized anymore. Because before, if it was something that was in Chulin, maybe there was a possibility of utilizing it. Now, there's no possibility of utilizing it because it's subject to the Dusha of the Mikdash, and therefore it's Asur for anyone to get Hana or any benefit from it. I mean, as Rashi notes, this qualification of Rav over here only refers to the items besides Bikurim, because Bikurim don't need Kiddush HaKli, and therefore this whole statement is not relevant to the Bikurim at all. Tarabanan, Klei HaKodesh Shenikvu. If you have Klei HaKodesh that got a hole in them, Ein Mitichinutan. You cannot weld them back together, meaning that you can't heat up the metal and try to put them back together. Ein Mitichan LeTochan Avar. And you can't put in a lead filler in there. So you can't weld metal into the hole, and you can't put lead or molten lead into the hole to fill it. Nifgimu. If they have any pagam in them, some chip or some problem with them, we do not fix them. A knife that has a nick in it, we do not sharpen the knife to get rid of that pagam. Nishmita, if the knife slips out of the handle, Tosfot says nishmita is lakta. There was some problem with the knife. Doesn't necessarily mean that it slipped out, even it could be loose in the handle. It was something that was wrong with the knife, and therefore, we don't return it to the handle. We don't allow you to reconstitute or refurbish it, we ask you to replace it. First of all, we don't fix the items, because if they have a patch in them, they don't look nice. And we're dealing with avoda before Hashem, and you want to bring your best stuff forward, you don't want to bring a refurbished item before Hashem. It might even be, if it was functional without fixing the hole, and you fix the hole, it might still be problematic, because of the fact that these refurbished items are not the best item to bring forward. And we have a principle, which we're going to see in a minute, that ein aniyut b'makom ashirut. The place of the Mikdash is a place of pomp and circumstance. It is a place of the worship of Hashem. And so therefore, we're not going to skimp on anything. We're not going to use subpar kelim. In that context, this is like the equivalent of the royal palace. And they only use the best there. They're not going to use the subpar items. For that reason, if you weld it together, or you melt some metal there, melt some lead there to fill the hole, we won't allow you to use it. And as we noted before, the Mishnah that allows you to use these items when they have still the same function as the original keli might just be bidiavad and tell you that it works and it is mikadesh, but l'chatchila, we ask you to replace the item and not use the subpar kelim in the avodat Hashem, which is an avoda that should be an avoda akin to royalty and royal service, where we don't use these type of kelim. Now, as far as the sakin shenifgam, Rashi says that sakin shenifgam is only if there's a pgima gidola, it's a significant nick in the knife, that even after you sharpen the knife, the nick or that gam is still noticeable in the knife. That's when it's problematic. But you have these small nicks that after you sharpen them, they're no longer visible, then you could definitely sharpen the knife and use it. It's only when there's a visible nick left in it that that is problematic. And then nishmita, if the handle slips out, obviously that could cause problems, because then when you're shechting, the handle could fall out of it, and that would cause problems in terms of the shechita itself. Or the fact that the handle already slipped off makes it that when you reconstitute the knife and putting the handle back in, again, it's a refurbished item and no longer a new or strong item that you're using in the Mikdash, and that would be inappropriate. Abba Shaul Omer, Sakin mitarefet haita b'Mikdash. There was this Sakin that caused trefot in the Mikdash. V'nimnu alei koanim v'ganzua. And so the koanim came to a consensus, and they put it into Gniza. Rashi says that the problem was that this was a soft metal knife. And so then, every time they sharpened it and then tried to use it, these nicks would develop in the knife because the metal was so soft. So given that, they decided in the end just to get rid of the knife because it was just too risky to use the knife because of the problems that it was mitaref. That many times it would chip or it would nick, and then it would cause the animal or the shkita to be a trefa. And so to avoid that problem, they got rid of the knife. As I said before, that Rashi says that the begimot that are problematic in a knife and you can't sharpen is only when it's begimah gedolah, when it's a significant nick that even after the sharpening it's still visible. So this knife, there were small nicks that where every time they sharpened it, they were not visible anymore. And then the Rambam in his explanation of the refurbishing of the kelim says, well, you can't just take the kelim and use them in chulin anymore because they're already kodesh. And they're kodesh as klei sharet. You also can't utilize them anymore because they are refurbished and they're not brand new. So what you end up having to do is to melt the kli down to raw metal again and then reconstitute a kli. In that way, you create a klei kodesh from what was once a klei kodesh, but you recreate it in such a manner that it is now new and doesn't have this look of being refurbished and then can be utilized in the mikdash. So that's how you deal with recycling these klei kodesh that have problems in them or have damage that is done to them. And then the Gemara says, Tarabanan, Bigdei Kuna, Inosimota Masei Machat, Ele Masei Oreg. The way that the Bigdei Kuna are made is through weaving and not through stitching. Shenemar Masei Oreg, because the Pasuk says that they are done through weaving. Now, the Bigdei Kuna are woven, but not only are they woven like the way that we normally make clothing, which is that you'd weave one part of a piece of clothing, then another part, then you'd stitch the two pieces of cloth that were woven together to form the beged. So that's what the Gemara is bringing in the bright here, that you can't do. You have to weave the whole thing in its entirety so that it's a beged that is woven, and that's what creates the beged. You can't take pieces of woven material and pieces of woven material and then affix them together through masei machat, through stitching, in order to get the beged. So there's going to be no seam on the beged because it's woven. Gemara in Yoma actually says that you can stitch on the sleeves. It's not that they did that for the body of the clothing as well as the sleeves. Rather, they did it for the body of the clothing, and then they did the sleeves and stitched the sleeves onto the beged. So there is some maseh machat, but the general beged, or the core beged, is made totally from a weave and not from stitching together different pieces of a weave. So it's as if you are weaving it to fit the Kohen, or around the Kohen himself, that you're weaving it, and that's the chokhmah in this maseh oreg, that it was done in such a manner by which they wove the entire beged rather than attaching disparate weaves together. Nitga'alu, if they become stained or dirty, in mechapsin, we do not launder them, lo b'neter v'lo b'aho, not in lye or natron, and not in aloe. Ha? B'mayim mechapsin? So you're suggesting now that means that you can clean them in water? If you can't clean them, then you should be able to clean them at all, including with water. And especially with water, because water is not as good a detergent as netter and aho. So if you're going to restrict netter and aho, you should definitely restrict laundering with water. So Amar Abayi Achikamar, this is the way to understand the Braita. Hug'u, if they become soiled or stained, b'mayim, if it is to the point where water could remove whatever problem is here, then mechapsin oto b'netter b'aho. Then you can launder it any way you want. You can launder it in water, and you can launder it in detergent. So if the stain is a stain such that it could be removed by water, then you're allowed to launder the beged and take it out. If it has a stain or it's soiled to the point where only using the detergents would get out whatever it is, then even with water, you can't launder it. So then what Rabbi is suggesting is that the netar and oho and the mayim in the brighter are not defining the type of laundering, but rather the type of stain or soiling that is taking place on the beged kuna. The greater the problem, we're less likely we are to allow you to launder the beged. So if it's some soft stain or a small soiling of the beged which water could have gotten rid of, then you can launder it any way you want as long as the stain itself or the item is not too bad, because then you're not really doing what's called aniyut b'makom ha'shirut. That's a pretty standard thing to do for a beged. But if the beged has a stain or soiled in such a way that it requires detergents to get it out, that's much more of a significant undertaking to do that. And then that becomes aniyut b'makom ha'shirut, because you are cleansing begadim instead of replacing the begadim. And some suggest, we don't launder the big day kahuna at all. That means including if the stain is a stain that can be removed by water. She'en aninut b'makom ha'shirut, which is the basic underlying principle of everything we're speaking about here, that we don't act like paupers in a place which is of royalty and of kedusha, a place where wealth and opulence should be the standard because of the fact that it is in the service of Hashem. In that case, we wouldn't let you launder it at all. That means that there was a pretty active exchange of the big day kuna, because anytime they became soiled or ruined, then they'd have to replace the big day kuna since they weren't going to launder them. And of course, you have to weigh against that the principle that the Gemara speaks about in Yoma, which is Hatorah Chasal Mamonam Shel Yisrael. So there has to be a balance between this idea of Ein Aniyut B'Makom HaShirut versus the donations and the cost to Bnei Yisrael to maintain that level of royalty and regalness, and the balance between those will tell us whether we allow you to launder the clothing, to clean the clothing, or whether we replace them when there are stains on the clothing. That we know from the Psukim in the Torah that the Mi'il was made totally out of Tchelet. It's as opposed to the other parts of the Big Day Kuna, which are made up of a mix of materials, three wool materials, Tchelet, Argaman, and Tolat Shani, and then linen material, which was the Bat, and then they were done on a 7-ply basis with gold woven with 6 strings. And then they were all put together, the 4 materials, with the ply to get you to a weave that had a 28-ply to it. And that's how they made all the big day kuna. The mi'il is different because it only has 1 material that's used in it, and that is the tchelet. Shenemar v'yas et mi'il eifod kalil tchelet. Be kulo, kalil, entirety, it is tchelet. Shulav ketsa. How do you deal with the shulayim, the seam, or the hem of the peget? But the truth is that they're really referencing not to the actual seam or hem at the bottom, but rather the items that hang from it. Mevit chelet vargaman mitzvat shani, shizurim, that were spun together, ve'oseh otam k'min rimonim, and then you form them into pomegranates, shlo pitchu peyem, pomegranates that are not so ripe that they've already broken open or burst open, but they're at the point where they're full, but not so ripe that they split open. And similar in shape to the helmet that the young kids put on their heads when they are playing war. As you can see here described in Rashi, that he says that the konaot are buttons. Hazuyim kemin tik shel nechoshet. It is some sort of copper pocket that they put at the end of a spear where the handle of the spear is. And the children take those and place them on top of their baskets that they wear on their heads when they're pretending to war with each other, that they call helmets. So it is a helmet that is put on top of the heads of the kids, the cone that they put at the top of their helmets that they make for their play war that they have between each other. That's the shape of these pomegranates. So that's what you're going to put at the bottom. Umevi shivim ushtaim zagim. And he brings 72 bells. Shebehen shivim ushtaim inbalin, that have inside of them 72 anvils or 72 knockers that are inside of the bells. V'toleben shloshim ishisha mitzad zeh, v'shloshim ishisha mitzad zeh. 36 on this side, 36 on the other side. So Rashi, who believes that the me'il was a complete tunic, it was the equivalent basically of the ketonet, but just done in tchelet. So it was a single beged that was sealed up the sides, front and back, and around the collar, and the Kohen used to pull it over his top, like the ketonet, and that was the meal that sat on top. So, according to Rashi, he says, what does it mean that they put 36 on this side, 36 on that side? It means front and back. So that's how Rashi explains it. The other end, there are Rishonim, like the Ramban of the Torah, who argue on Rashi's understanding of what the meal was, and they believe that the meal was more akin to a cape, which is that it was open in the front, with the exception of the collar, because the collar cannot be ripped, it cannot be opened up at all. So the collar was sealed around, but the front had a split down, and then the back was like a cape that came around with that split in the front. There are those who want to suggest that even there was a split in the back. According to those Rishonim, like the Rambam, who explained the Me'il in that fashion, then the Mitzadzeh means on the right side and the left side, because the cape has a split in it in the front, and according to those who say there's a split in the front and the back, then it has two sides to it, and then each side would get 36. Now Rashi says that the Gersa, you can see that in Shin Gimel Mikubetet as well, has been told that Bo, Shloshim Vishichah, Bitzadzeh, Shloshim Vishichah, Bitzadzeh, and Rashi says Bo does not mean inside of the Rimonim, but rather in between the Rimonim. And told that Bo means on the Me'il itself, they hung the bells in between the Rimonim. The other hand, the Ramban takes it very literally. It says Tole Bahen means inside the Rimonim themselves, that the bells were actually placed inside of the Rimonim rather than in between the Rimonim, like Rashi says. And that's what it says in the Pasuk, Vayasu Pomene Zav Tor, Vayitnu Et HaPomenim B'toch HaRimonim, Av Shulei HaMe'il Savi B'toch HaRimonim. So the question, what's the meaning of B'toch HaRimonim? Does B'toch HaRimonim mean literally inside of the Rimonim? That's what the Ramban believes. Or does B'toch HaRimonim mean in between the Rimonim? And that's the way Rashi reads it. And that really is based on the next pasuk, which says pamon v'rimon, ashulei ha'me'il saviv. Makes it sound that they're alternating between a pamon and a rimon, and a pamon rimon, whereas the Ramban will read it as pamon v'rimon together, next to another pamon v'rimon, ashulei ha'me'il saviv, on the hem of the me'il all around. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, because we're going to see there's an upcoming quotation that seems to indicate that it's referencing over here to Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Shloshim v'shisha hayu. There are only 36 of them. Shmona aser mitzadzeh, v'shmona aser mitzadzeh. 18 on each side. Amar Rabbi Inyane bar Sison. So Rabbi Inyane bar Sison says, k'machloket kan, kach machloket b'marot negayim. Same machloket they have here with regards to the me'il, whether it's 72 or 36, they have a similar machloket with regards to negayim. It's not marot negayim. Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus Omer lamed vav. He says that there are 36 different types of nigayim. Akavya ben Mahalal Omer, 72. He says that there are 72. And the Balei Tosafot point out over here that nobody disagrees with the Mishnah at the beginning of Shavuot that says that the nigayim are shtayim shein arba. So the Balei Tosafot explained that shtayim shein arba is a reference to white nigayim that are considered to be tmeim. Those are shtayim shein arba. But there's a large number of other types of nigayim which are mixed with red, which are mixed with green or yellow, or that are nigei batim, nigei begadim. So that's what's being enumerated over here, not just the four that we know from the Mishnah in Shavuot. And then, the fact that their machloket over here is similar in number, which means that Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus in both instances says that there are 36 of the item, whereas Akavya ben Mehalel, or the Tanakama in the instance of the previous Braita, believe that there's 72. So you could think that the parallel is just numeric in nature, but if you look at the top Tosafot, he quotes from the Rabbeinu Tam, the Tali Hai Bahai, the reason that they're connecting between the Ga'im and the Big Dekuhuna is, Dimishum Dimi'il Bala Chaper Lashon Hara. As we're going to see in a second, that the Mi'il functions as a Kapara for Lashon Hara. V'chein Niga'im Ba'im Al Lashon Hara. And Nigayim are also a punishment, as we're going to see in the Gemara in Arachin, for Lashon Hara. So that correlation between them means that not only is there a numeric similarity between these two things, but there's also a thematic connection between them, which is that they both have to do with the speaking of Lashon Hara. Right, so now, Amar Rabbi Inyane Bar Sason, Lama Nismecha Parshat Korbanot, the Parshat Big Day Kuhuna. Why are the Korbanot juxtaposed to the Big Day Kuhuna? Rashi claims that that's in Parshat Tzav, by the Miluim, where Moshe first dresses the Kohanim in their Big Day Kuhuna, and afterwards then they begin, they do the process of the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim. Others quote, which to me makes more sense, from the Tzivoy of the Miluim in Tetzaveh, because in Parshat Tetzaveh you have the description of the Big Day Kuhuna, and right after that you have the Korban HaTamid, and then the instructions with regards to the Shivat Yimei HaMiluim. So over there you also have the juxtaposition of the Big Day Kuhuna to the Big Korbanot. Lomar lecha, to teach you, ma korbanot mechaprim, just like korbanot bring kapara, ha Big Day Kuhuna mechaprim, so too the Big Day Kuhuna afford kapara or atonement. And as we know from the Haftorah that we read by Chanukah, that bigadim tzoim are associated with sin, and there the Malach says to Yeshua Kohen Gadol, to remove from himself the bigadim tzoim, which again represent the idea of sin. Soiled clothing is representative of sin, and the big day kuhuna are lechavod u'letifaret. So they're the antithesis of the Bigadim Tzuim. They're the change from the Bigadim Tzuim to the Bigadim of Kavod Tifaret. And therefore the Bigadim of the Bigdei Kehuna provide Kapara, or the antidote to the Bigadim Tzuim, in a more figurative sense that the sin creates, in the Kabbalistic sense, a klipa around the individual, which creates some sort of barrier between him and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And like the clothing wraps the individual, so that klipa that blocks the individual because of the chait has to be removed. And similarly with clothing, that it's bigadim, so you have to be replaced with bigdei, kavod, v'tifaret. And the Kohen Gadol, who is the representative of Klal Yisrael, is the appropriate individual whose clothing of kavod v'tifaret can provide that kapara for those that have bigadim and tzuim. And now it explains what that means. Ketonet mechaperet al shvichut dam. The ketonet acts as a kapara for the spilling of blood for murder. Shenemar vayishchatu seir izim vayitbalu et ketonet badam. This is with a reference to the brothers when they sell Yosef down to Mitzrayim. So over there it says afterwards they take his ketonet and then they shech a goat and dip the ketonet into the dam. It's hard to understand why this is any proof to the fact that the ketonet is mechaperet ashvichut damim. Rashi claims that because tvila and kapara are synonymous in nature. So that's what it says over here. Vayitbelu et ketonet badam. And vayitbelu is connected to kapara. And so you see there that the ketonet and kapara are associated together with the word dam, which is a reference to the shvichut damim. So that's how Rashi explains the source from here. The other possibility is that in the Pashtut of the Psukim over there, the brothers are looking to cover up the murder of their brother. And they're covering it up by using the ketonet and dipping the ketonet in the dam. So you see that the ketonet comes to cover up. So in the case of the brothers, they were trying to do it in order to deceive their father. But in the Mikdash, the ketonet will function to cover up. Murder means that it will provide kapara for murder. Michnasayim mechaperet al gilui arayot. The pants, knickers that they wear are mechaper for illicit relations. Shenemar vasalehem michnasei bad lechasot basareva. Because the michnasei bad are there to cover over the private areas, the erva. So it also, in a more figurative sense, also provides a kisui le erva, covering up the erva by providing kapara for arayot. Mitznefet, the hat, mechaperet al gasei ruach, on people that are haughty. Minayin, how do you know that? Amar b'chenina, yavo davar shebegova, yechaper lagova. It's a logical reason, which is that's the highest point of the big day kuhuna. So it should come and be mechaper on gasut haruach. Avnet, the belt that they wore, mechaper al hurhur alev, that is mechaper on improper thoughts. Hecha deita. And the reason being is because that's where the belt is. We learned earlier that the belt has to be around the area where the elbows are. It cannot be in the place, lo yachkuru b'yaza, that it can't be in the place where they sweat. So therefore, it's around the area of the heart that the belt goes around, or where the elbows touch the body. And so that's the avnet is mechaperet on sins of the heart. Choshen, mechaper al dinim. Choshen is mechaper on injustice, or miscarriages of justice. Shnema vasita choshen mishpat. You see that the choshen is associated with mishpat. Efod mechaper al avodat kochavim, and the apron was mechaper an avodah zarah. Shnemar ein efod v'trofim. Hosea says there was no efod and trofim. The way Rashi explains it is that if there is no efod, then there are trofim. When there's no efod, you have a problem of trofim, which are avodah zarah. But there was efod, then there would be no problem of trafim, because the ephod is what provides the kapara for the trafim. Me'il mechaper lashon hara. And as we said before, the me'il is mechaper on speaking lashon hara. Minayin. How do you know that's the case? Or mechanina, yavo davar shebekol yechaper al kol hara. That the thing that makes noise, the me'il, which we spoke about before, the bells, which make noise, they are mechaper on the kol hara, on the bad voice that is being said, meaning lashon hara. Betzitz mechaper la zutpanim, and betzitz is mechaper on brazenness. Betzitz k'tiv ayam metzach Aaron, because betzitz it says it must be on the forehead of Aaron, ubazutpanim. And when it comes to brazenness, k'tiv umetzach isha zona hayadlach, that you acted like a woman who's a harlot, who's brazen in her actions. You see, the term metzach is used in both cases, and that tells us that the tzitz is mechaper on that brazenness. It says, Hini? Is that really true? Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Shnei Dvarim, Lo Matzina Lahem Kapara B'Korbanot. Matzina Lo Kapara Mimakom Acher. There are these two issues where we don't find any Kapara through Avodah and the Mikdash, yet we do find Kapara from them in a different manner. Be'eluhin. These two things are Shvichut Damim or Lishon Hara. Shvichut Damim, Egla Arufa. You find Kapara for Shvichut Damim in the case of Egla Arufa, where it provides Kapara, even though it's not a Korban and it's outside the Mikdash. Or Lishon Hara, Miktoret. And Lishon Hara gets Kapara from the bringing of the Ketoret. The Tani Rabbi Chananya, Minayin Lektoret Shemichaperet. How do we know that the Ketoret, the incense that is brought in the Mikdash, is Michaper? Shnemar, Veitenet Aktoret Veichaper Alam. So in Pashat Korach, when Aaron has to run out and bring the Ketoret in order to save the people, after the people say, "Vayilonu kol adapni somi macharato Moshe v'Aaron lemar atem eimitem et am Hashem," so they actually, in a sense, speak lashon hara about Moshe v'Aaron, and the Ketoret is brought out in order to save them from that lashon hara, where it says, "Veikach Aaron kashet diber Moshe v'yarat zel toch hakal v'nei hechel hanegev v'am v'yiten et haKetoret v'yichaper al ha'am." It provides a kapara for the Am. So you see that the Ketoret provides kapara. V'tani debei Rabbi Yishmael, alma Ketoret mechaperet, al lashon hara. Yavo davar shebechashai, yechaper amasei chashai. Ketoret is mechaper on lashon hara, and that's for the reason that the Ketoret is done in private. When the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim goes into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, nobody else can be in the Kodesh, nobody else can be in the Eichal. He's there alone, and because he's there alone, the Ketoret is bechashai. It's in a quiet and private manner. So too, it'll be mechaper on masei chashai. It will be mechaper on those actions that are done in the quiet, meaning that lashon hara, which is spoken by people, and the gossiping between them, that's done in a quiet way or a whispering way, so that the Ketoret will come in mechaper. The Ketoret that's done bechashai will mechaper on lashon hara that is done bechashai. When it says kasha lashon hara, kasha shvichut damim and shvichut damim. We have a problem now because lashon hara has kapara through Ketoret. And also now your tummy has kapara through the me'il. In addition, you have the same problem with shvichut damim, where we're saying that the ketone provides kapara for the shvichut damim, as well as the egla rufa provides kapara for shvichut damim. So when it says lokasha, ha diyadiyah man katlei, ha diyadiyah man katlei. It's a question if we know the murderer or we don't know the murderer. Egla rufa comes to be mechaper when we don't know what the murderer is. The ketone will come to be mechaper when we do know who the murderer is. It says, Itiya man katlei, if we know who the murderer is, bar katalu, then he's a person subject to a death penalty, and then how can he get away with just having the kapara from the ketonet? So the case is, v'meziv v'lo hachrube. It's a case where it was done intentionally, but there was no hachra, there was no warning, and therefore he's not subject to the death penalty. Lashon hara, al lashon hara, nami lo kasha. Lashon hara is also not a problem. Ha, bitzina, ha befesia. There are two types of lashon hara. There's a lashon hara that's done quietly and privately. That's what the Ketoret comes to me with kapara on, because that is something b'chashai that provides kapara for that which is chashai. The other hand, there is a different type of lashon hara, which is you do it in a public forum, a public setting. There, you need the thing that makes noise, the me'il that makes noise, makes it known that the Kohen Gadol is coming, then that noise can provide the kapara for the lashon hara. Now, as Rashi points out over here, he says that the kapara that is provided in each of these instances is a kapara ala tzibur. Hilkach tzibur mitchapre. In any of these cases, it's talking about the tzibur as a whole, not the particular individual. And you can see that reiterated in the Pali Tosafot, that we're definitely speaking about the tzibur and not the individual. The person who murders does not get kapara from the egla rufa. And just like by the egla rufa, the kapara that we're speaking about is for the tzibur. Similarly, the kapara that is being provided by the ketonet for shvichut damim is not for the murderer, but rather for the people. Because there's an obligation upon the people to rid themselves of the murderer. Because it says that the aretz will not be naki, ki im bidam shofcho, until you rid yourself of the person who committed that murder. So there is a requirement or incumbency upon the tzibur to get rid of the murderer in order to gain that kapara. So if they fail to do that, that's where the ketonet comes in and saves them or provides them kapara, even if they don't eradicate this individual. But this individual will never be saved. That's the Gemara's question over here. When it says, man katlei, if we know who murdered, then bar katalu, then he's deserving of the death penalty. Not him, but we have an obligation to ensure that he gets a death penalty. And if we don't do that, they were going to have to be held accountable for it. And that's what the kapara of the kedona comes to do, is to protect us from that punishment, or the Bible will call it, of aravim zelazeh, our responsibilities to our fellow Jew, or in this case, I think it's just a broader public responsibility to rid ourselves of these people that are murderers, which the Torah says, if we don't do that, it'll be mitameh haaretz, and the Shekhinah will not be able to rest upon us if we don't get rid of all those murderers. At Balei Tosafot in the Gemara in Arachin, it speaks about the kapara of the Bigdei Kuhuna, suggests that the Bigdei Kuhuna only provide a kapara not for real murder or arayot, but rather the other averot that are associated with shvichut amim. For instance, mevayesh et chavero virabim. Someone embarrasses another individual in public, which is deemed to be light killing, so that's what the Bigdei Kuhuna can provide kapara for. They don't provide kapara for actual shvichut amim, but rather items that are considered like shvichut amim, items that are considered like arayot. So that's what they can be mechaper for. Others, like the Marsha, suggest that they can only be mechaper on shogeg and not mezid. And the Rosh in Arachin, as well as the Balei Tosafot on Daf Lamed Zayin in Sanhedrin, suggests that there's only kapara provided if the individual does tshuva. There's no kapara without tshuva. The Bigdei Kuhuna, only together with tshuva, can provide the kapara for the individual. Balei Tosafot over here, like in other places, asks about the fact that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that even though Batlei Arba Mitot Beitin, the four Mitot Beitin are no longer functioning, meaning that there's no longer any capital punishment, despite that fact, there are still manifestations of the Arba Midot that are still around. The Gemara says that that happened or was triggered at the time of the Churban HaBayit. So the Churban HaBayit, they stopped adjudicating capital cases, and then after the Churban HaBayit, we have this Mesorah that the Arba Midot Beitin are no longer executed because we don't have the Lishkat HaGazit, but nevertheless, there's still manifestations of the Arba Midot Beitin that kill the person who is deserving of being killed. The question we have is, we know that the Sanhedrin left the Lishkat HaGazit 40 years before the Churban, which means that capital punishment stopped being met out already 40 years before. So how come the Gemara says that only at the time of the Churban did this change take place? It really took place 40 years before the Churban. The Balei Tosafot bring a suggestion, which they reject, which is that the kapara during those 40 intervening years were provided by the Bigdei Kuhuna. So the Beit Din had stopped giving out capital punishment, but nevertheless the Bigdei Kuhuna were functioning in place of that as the kapara. Only at the time of the Churban, we also lost the Bigdei Kuhuna, that's when this new world started up, where there were these manifestations of the Arba Mitot Beit Din. Tosafot does not like that at all, because of what we just said before, that the kapara here that's being provided is being provided for the tzibur and not for the individual himself. And so just because they Bigdei Kuhuna around, that's not providing kapara for the murderer. And so there's still a problem. If Beit Din stopped adjudicating cases before the Churban HaBayit, then that should have been the transition point, not at the time of the Churban. So Tosafot says, Umiyu, hayti yachol lekayem perushta. So Tosafot claims over here that there's a difference in the kapara that's provided for the Bigdei Kuhuna with regards to arayot and avodah zarah, where it does provide kapara for the individual who violated, whereas for shvichut damim, it only provides kapara on the tzibur's obligation, not on the individual's obligation in that case. And for that reason, there is, 40 years before, still a kapara that is provided for certain capital punishments, and that's why it only gets triggered at the Churban HaBayit, because the Bigdei Kuhuna cut those interim years. Whereas the Tosafot in Sanhedrin just says that the Beit Din used to come back to Lishkat Gazit when they had a real necessity for it, if there was a pressing issue which they needed to provide capital punishment for. For that reason, it's only triggered at the Churban HaBayit, because the Bigdei Kuhuna don't necessarily provide that kapara. It does qualify at the end of that Tosafot in Sanhedrin that maybe the Bigdei Kuhuna, along with Tshuva, could provide that kapara, even for the individual themselves. All right, we're going to stop here with the completion of the Perek Kadron Alach HaMizbeach Mikadesh.